Welcome to the Business Bookshelf podcast, where I interview business authors and talk about their newly released books. The aim is that if you listen to this podcast regularly, that you'll get insight into a wide range of business topics, from leadership through to innovation, culture, communication, and much more. Today, our guest is Erica Anderson. Erica is the founding partner of Proteus, a coaching, consulting, and training firm that focuses on leader readiness. Over the past 30 years, she has developed a reputation for creating approaches to learning and business building that are custom tailored to her clients' challenges, goals, and culture. So I'm interviewing Erica today about her new book called Change from the Inside Out, Making You, Your Team, and Your Organization Change Capable. Change initiatives fail because humans are hardwired to return to what worked for us in the past. Her book offers a straightforward process for rewiring ourselves and those we lead to be more change capable. I talked to Erica about how we have a natural bias towards stability and safety, and so really don't like change. And then the second things we talk about is the change arc and also the five-step change model. So it's going to be a great interview. Enjoy it. Here we go.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here. This is going to be fun.
It's fantastic having you. Erica, where am I speaking to you from today? What part of the US are you in at the moment?
I am about an hour and 45 minutes by car or train north of New York City, right on the Hudson River. I'm looking out my window at the Hudson River. It's quite beautiful.
Amazingly, the last interview I did was also in your particular area, also around the Hudson part of the world. What do you love about living in that part of America?
Oh, there are so many things I love about it. I love like where we are is in the country. I can see just the river and trees. And from my house, I can take long walks in the woods. And we're an hour and 45 minutes from New York City. Mm. You know, it's a great combination. And the Hudson Valley is just incredibly beautiful. You know, in the 19th century, there was a Hudson Valley School of Art. And I now understand why, because the light and the geography and the vistas here are just lovely.
Wow. If I ever get back onto a plane, then I'll come and visit you. All right, Erica, could you, before we get into your fantastic book, which I really loved, and I've got personal application for myself, could you give us an overview of your career?
Yes, I started out, I spent my 20s on a spiritual quest. I lived in ashrams and it was a wonderful foundation for my life. And then I went to work for a guy named Tim Galway, who had written a best-selling book, a kind of sleeper best-selling book called The Inner Game of Tennis, which is not really about tennis. It's about how we learn and get in the way of our learning. And I loved it. He was beginning to act, he was being asked to apply his principles to business. And I helped him do that. I helped him create workshops and stuff. And then I went on to work for another wonderful guy named Peter Block, who was kind of the father of organizational development, also turned his IP into workshops. And then for about 5 years, I worked for a firm that did leadership and management development. And I feel like that was all kind of, as my mom used to say, grist for my mill. By the time I was in my mid-30s, I knew that I wanted to start my own company. And the reason was two things. One is this was in the late 80s. And all of these things that I saw as so critical, leadership, management, communication, teaming, all these skills at the time were known as soft skills. Like they don't really matter, you know? Mm. And I really realized as everything started to speed up and flatten out in the late 80s, that these were going to be the important skills. In fact, when I started Proteus, our first tagline was skills for mastering the future. And that's what we were focusing on. And then the other thing I wanted to do is I wanted to become what has since come to be called a business partner. At the time, you know, training companies and consulting companies was like widget factories. Here, give me this training, you know. Mm. And what I really wanted to do was create that partnership where, and in fact, our mission at Proteus has always been helping clients clarify and move toward their hoped for future. And that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to partner with our clients to do that. So that's why I started Proteus, and you know, the rest is history. It's been 31 years.
Sure, that's amazing. And we'll talk about Proteus at the end of the interview. By the way, what does Proteus mean?
Oh, that's a great story too. So my original business partner, a wonderful guy named Marty Seldman, who was a kind of mentor to me, and he was asking me about the company. He really started it with me and for me to help me get started because he was older than I and had more experience. And he said, what's the deal here? And I said, I see this as being what we're doing kind of timeless and universal, this thing of helping people clarify and move toward their hope for future. If we can help them get clear about what it is they want to do, then we can help them move toward it. And Marty said, oh, that sounds mythological. So we were at a bookstore and we went into the bookstore and got this book called A Guide to the Gods and Goddesses. And we found that there was a Greek god named Proteus, and he lived in the sea. And in the Odyssey, Odysseus wants to know the future. And he's told that if he can find Proteus and hold on to him, no matter what shape he takes on, he'll have to tell him the future.
Huh.
Isn't that great?
That's amazing. That's incredible. So thank you so much for that. And we'll get on to Proteus in a few minutes' time. But the main topic of the conversation is your fantastic book, and it's called Change from the Inside Out, Making You, Your Team, and Your Organization Change Capable. So, Erica, what led you to writing the book? And could you give us a brief overview of it?
Yes. So this is my fifth book. And whenever I write a book, it's because I get curious about a topic and I want to crack the codes at the heart of it. So I think what are generally considered fairly complex topics, usually having to do with leadership. And there are things I want to unpack. And so the two things, and we had had a change practice for almost a decade, had been helping people through change. And we had a good five-step model. And what I wanted to get underneath was, why is change so hard? And how do we go through change? What is the process that an individual human being goes through when they make a change? Because I felt like if I could understand and help people understand those two things, it would have an impact on, you know, there's this fairly famous statistic from McKinsey where they say 70% of organizational change efforts fail. 70%. And they further go on to say that the main reasons that's true are lack of management support and lack of employee buy-in. And that to me was just people. That was just, okay, change is hard and people don't go through the change and therefore the change isn't adopted and it fails. So I felt like if I could get underneath those two things, it would be hugely helpful. And I feel like I found good, useful, applicable answers to those two questions.
No, you definitely did. So the core thing is change, like you've mentioned now. And, you know, if I look at the world, it's just increasing. Change is increasing. I seem to be almost changing careers on an annual basis nowadays. And companies are changing. Companies are morphing. Do you see that accelerating even further in the future?
Oh, 100%. And in fact, as you know, Lance, the title of the first chapter of the book is How Change Has Changed. Mm-hmm. And I start out with this story about when I'm old enough that TV came out when I was a little kid. And so we got our first TV when I was little, when I was just a few years old. And then 10 years later, we got our first color TV. So that was the pace of change in the 50s and 60s. It was stately, right? You had 10 years before a new innovation happens. And now you have 10 minutes, right? And so that's how I got into why change is hard. So that was the 50s and 60s. If you look back even farther, 100, 200, 500, 1,000 years, every era of human history before our present era, an individual person's life stayed pretty much the same from beginning to end. You know, if your dad was a farmer, you were like to be a farmer. If you grew up, if your parents grew up in a certain place, you
one job for life.
One job for life. You went to school where your parents went to school and your kids would go to the same school if you went to school. So that stability, that unimaginable, I think, to us, level of stability and unchanging, one day is the same as another, is what human life has been until very recently. So we're really wired, And when change happened, it was an aberration. It was a famine or a plague or a war. And the safest bet was to get back as quickly as possible to your previous condition, that kind of homeostatic urge to go back to the known, right? So that's how we're wired. So of course change feels dangerous and threatening to us. We have thousands and thousands of years of conditioning and probably even natural selection toward stability, toward sameness, toward the known. So that really sets us up to be freaked out on a daily basis by the level of change that we're having to undergo now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I force myself, because I'm just like everybody else. I have a natural ability to stability and safety. And unfortunately, that's not my life. That's not your life. That's not the world at the moment. And so you almost got to force yourself out of that stability and safety and have those few sleepless nights. And I know a particular friend of ours who is very reluctant to change, and he's actually missing out. So his career has stagnated because he hasn't got that extra step into the wild, crazy world of constant change.
Well, that's exactly right, Lance. And so if we don't rewire ourselves, we will get passed by and our lives will become, I think, less than we want them to be. So then the second, once I'd understood that, I thought, well, then what happens? How are we successful? What happens when we actually do go through a change? So we came to what we've come to call the change arc. And arc, I made it an arc because, you know, as you go up a hill, things get harder and then they're easier on the downside. So the first step in the arc, like when a change comes at us, it's different when we think of it ourselves often, but when a change comes at us, the first thing that happens, and we call this proposed change, we want to know some things about the change. And it turns out that it's very predictable what we want to know. The first thing we want to know is, what does this mean for me?
Yeah.
What is actually changing for me? I don't care that much about everybody else, but what's changing for me? And then we want to know why. Why is this happening? Because the status quo is our preference, we need some good reasons that are personally meaningful to us to even consider the change. So we try and gather that information. And then the third thing we want to know is, what will it look like after the change has been made? What's the post-change future, right? And when I'm writing the book, one of the interesting pieces of research that that came up was that many psychologists now believe that our deepest fear is fear of the unknown. And if you connect that to our preference for stability and the known, that makes complete sense. It's like, I don't want to, that's like, you're telling me I need to change and you're not telling me what it's going to look like. That feels like walking into a dark alley at night. You know, I'm not doing that. So we start trying to gather this information. And then, and this is the top of the arc, because of our wiring, because change has historically been a threat and a danger, our opening mindset about change that comes at us is usually that it's going to be difficult, costly, and weird.
What was that last one? Weird. Okay.
Weird, right? So difficult means I don't know how to do this, and other people are going to get in the way of me doing it. This is just going to be hard. There are going to be obstacles to me actually doing what you're saying I should do. Costly can mean simple things like time and money. It's going to cost me time and money. But mostly what it means is this change, making this change, I fear that it will take away from me things that I value. So things like identity and freedom and reputation and power and relationships, all those intrinsic things that we find valuable, we fear that change is going to take that from us. And then weird just means strange. This is not how we do things around here. I can't relate to this, right? And so we're gathering the information. That's what our self-talk is. We're thinking, oh my God, this is going to be difficult, costly, and weird, right?
Absolutely. And so those four things are proposed change. Why is this happening? What will it look like after the change has happened, which is a very difficult question, obviously. And then it will probably be difficult, costly, and weird. Now, I guess this applies to, obviously, companies and individuals. And if you're looking at a company and you've got a meeting and you in your book, you tell the story of Jade. And she is at a company meeting, senior executive meeting. And it's going really well and everyone's happy. And then she says, by the way, I see that major change is on the horizon and we need to change. Otherwise, there's going to be trouble and big trouble coming our way. So exactly. I just wanted to ask you about the jades of this world, because they're so important to companies. But because of that fourth thing, the difficult, the costly, and the weird, how are jades recognized and treated within companies? Are you an author and would like to launch your business or technology book to a global audience? The Business Bookshelf podcast can run a virtual book launch for you. It'll include planning sessions with you, the 60-minute live event on LinkedIn, Facebook, and YouTube, up to 3 guests to appear and endorse your book, social media support and activation, prizes and giveaways, the edited event to share with people who couldn't make it, 3 social snippets to share on social media, and a dedicated episode of this podcast. To find out more, visit www.businessbookshelfpodcast.com. And if it's not for you, then tell others about it. Thank you.
Well, let's combine that with, let me finish taking you through the change arc, and then I'll tell you why Jade was unsuccessful in that meeting and how she then changed her behavior and made it more successful later. So that's, you know, that we proposed change, we start trying to gather this information about what's in it for me, why is this happening, what will it look like, all the while having this negative mindset of it's going to be difficult, costly, and we're predicting that it's going to be bad because historically it has been bad. So then we noticed, and this is where it got really interesting to me, Lance, then we noticed that when people actually did make change, it was because, first of all, their mindset shifted. They started to think and talk to themselves differently about the change. And the mindset shift was to, oh, I can see how this change could be easy, or at least doable, rewarding, and normal. So from difficult to easy or doable, from costly to rewarding. So you see, oh, it's going to give me more than it's going to take away. And from weird to normal. And normal in this context means other people like me are doing this or saying that it's a good thing. And almost most important, people I admire and want to emulate, i.e. leaders, are modeling this and are saying it's a good thing and are behaving in these ways. That's when something starts to get normative. And when I saw that, I saw that when someone's mindset shifted, then and only then were they willing to learn and do the new behaviors that were required by the change, and then the change could occur. So when I realized this, it was so helpful because I understood that in order to cascade a change through an organization successfully and not get that response that Jade got, you can't just blow it up. You can't just say, you know, we're terrible in a whole variety of ways. If we don't change, we're going to die. Then that absolutely, you know, gets people into their difficult, costly, and weird. So then what she went back and did is exactly what people need, which is, they got clear about what is the change, why does it need to happen, what will it look like when it's done. They got clear about all that stuff so that they could communicate it. And in the process of getting clear, the senior team, their mindset started to shift, as hers already had. And then when they brought other people into the tent, they could help them. They could really attend to, okay, here's that initial information you want in proposed change. Now, how can we help you make that mindset shift from difficult, costly, weird to easy, rewarding, normal? And I got very excited about that because I realized that our five-step change model was a great frame for that, for integrating the practical aspects of change with the human side of change, and therefore helping cascade a whole organization of people through that mindset shift so that they can accept and adopt the change. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. And I'd like to ask you about that five-step change model. Just remember, listeners, that we're speaking to Erica Anderson about a fantastic book, Change from the Inside Out, Making You, Your Team, and Your Organization Change Capable. And Erica, the question I want to ask you is about the third part, point of the arc, which is, you know, proposed change, why is this happening? And then what will it look like after the change? Do you have any suggestions on how we can do that? Because that seems quite difficult to me to be able to predict the future or look into the future.
Oh, I love that question. So interestingly, the first two steps of the five-step change model, the first one is clarify the change and why it's needed, which are two of the three things people want to find out in proposed change.
Yeah.
And then the second step is envision the future state. And so what we encourage people to do is, first of all, we say, okay, you can't know everything, but you can predict some things. Like, for instance, if you, Jade and her company, they wanted to create a future where they were all on the same systems, basically, because they were on a bunch of little ad hoc systems, and where clients, customers, could, their business model made it so that customers could shop equally easily in store or online and could go back and forth between the two. Mm. So that's what they envisioned. They didn't envision like what the whole world was going to be like or what their whole everything was, but they envisioned two or three really critical things that would be different and better in this future if they made the change. And just being able to do that, just being able to say a couple of things that people can envision, because that's how our minds work. When we, when somebody tells us something's, you know, we're all kind of visionaries. I mean, think about a kid who's thinking about their birthday and they want a bike. They can envision exactly what it's going to feel like and look like and how their friends are going to respond. We can all do this. We can all see futures that don't exist. And so when you help people do that with a change, it's hugely soothing and reassuring. So it's not just some blank unknown space. It's like, oh, customers will be better served in these ways, and they can, oh, I get it. So then our website won't just be kind of a billboard. It'll be a place where they can actually shop. Oh, I see. And then they could find something online and come into the store. Okay, that seems cool. I like that. You know, when we can start to see a future, it's really reassuring to us.
And it certainly doesn't help if this new future is much more profitable and more efficient and more easy to operate in and all those type of things as well, I guess.
And let me pick up on that, Lance, because one of the things that you have to be really careful about when you're a leader is that the whys that you talk about and the future that you create is relevant to the people that you're talking to. I mean, one of the things I talk about in the book is, a lot of times senior leaders will say, oh, wow, if we make this change, the company will be much more profitable. Okay, well, that might be relevant to them because their compensation might be tied to profit or they might have equity in the company, right? Mm. But it's unlikely to be relevant to somebody who's working on a production line making $15 an hour, right? What might be relevant to them is it'll make your job easier. Or customers will like it better. Or, you know, you got to figure out what's important to them so that they can personally see it as rewarding, which helps them make that mindset shift, right?
Yeah, no, that's right. And then purpose as well, it furthers the company's purpose and it's going to, you know, bring them to a greater realization of the purpose that they have for the company. Now, Erica, you spoke about the 5-step change model. And, you know, I don't want you to go into any of them in too much depth, but because they need to read your book for that. But what are the what is the 5-step change model? Obviously, we don't have time either. What is the 5-step change model that you do to improve the odds of a successful change?
Well, I can do it very headline-y, Lance. So the first step is, as we said, what is the change and why is it needed? So you clarify the change and why it's needed. And usually the way change works is there's a small, usually fairly senior group of people thinking through this on behalf of the organization. So in that first step, what are we actually talking about changing? Let's be clear and simple about this. And then why is it needed? That kind of elevator pitch that will be relevant to people. Mm. Step two is then envision the future. What is the future that the change will bring? And how will we measure the success of that future? Mm. So it's usually a small group figuring this stuff out. And it's great because they're figuring it out on behalf of the whole organization. Because again, remember, those are the things we all want to know in proposed change. So once the senior team knows that, then they can, as they bring more people into the tent, and that's what happens in step three, you start bringing people into the tent. So in step three, you're going to build the change. So you decide who's the change team. Is it us who are already thinking about it, or is it some other group of people who are going to drive and manage this change through the organization? And then you think about the key stakeholders. Are there other people in the organization whose support we need to make this happen? And that's a really important thing to think about. And then you bring those people in by sharing with them what you've come to in the first two steps, right? Because you satisfy that need they have to know what's the change, why is it happening, what will it look like when it's done. So you bring them in, and then the change team actually builds the nuts and bolts change plan. Like any big project, what are we going to have to do organizationally to make this happen? Then step four, and this is the step that almost never happens in my experience, unless you tell people how important it is. We call it lead the transition. And what you do, figure out what groups in the organization are going to be most affected by the change. And how are they going to need to be helped to move through their change arc? Because those who are most affected by the change are the ones who are likely to have the strongest, difficult, costly, weird reactions. Mm-hmm. So what are they going to need? What is going to be difficult and costly and weird for them specifically? And then we have these four, what we call change levers, which are kind of force multipliers. They're things to think about to help you create a plan for moving them through their change arc. So you think about those groups, you create a transition plan for them, transition plan as opposed to change plan, a plan to help them, you know, move through that change arc. And then you execute them. And this is the key to success, simultaneously. The same time you're executing the nuts and bolts change plan, you're executing this transition plan that's helping people through the change. So that's step four, and it's critical. It's where everybody gets brought into the tent, and you have the opportunity to do it in a way that makes it most likely that the largest number of people will be able to move through the change arc and accept the change. And then step five is called keep the change going. And that's really important, because there you notice, okay, is this change, we've made this change, is it actually yielding the results we want? And if not, why not? And then making subsequent changes, because you know, change almost always has unintended consequences. So if you really note how it's working, then you can dig into like, oh, why is it not working, and change it more if you need to. One example I use in the book is a company that decided to change their production process for their core product. And part of the change they made was to automate a particularly difficult part of the process. So they did that, they automated it, but they noticed that the line wasn't speeding up the way they thought it would. It wasn't getting the results they hoped for. So they really dug into it. And what they realized is the automation part was speeding up the process, but then at the end of the automation part, the human part was slowing back down again, because the person could only do it as fast as they could do it. So they realized that they had to put a couple of people rather than one person. They had to put a couple of people on the line at the end of the automation section so that they could get those faster results that they were looking for. So then they made that change in the same way. What do we need to do? How do we help people transition through this? You can't just assume that subsequent changes, you don't have to think about people. No, they've already gone through one change. You have to help them through the subsequent change then. And the last thing that you do, and this is so important in step five to keep the change going, is you notice the places in the organization, systems or processes or structures or even your culture, that were impediments to the change. And it's likely that those things are going to be impediments to any change. So then you have an opportunity to see those clearly and fix them. So like, for instance, if you've been making a big change and you notice that one of your core systems, maybe it's even a people system, is hugely complicated and really got in the way of making this change, it's like, oh, if we simplify this system, then all subsequent changes will be less of a hassle. So that's the model.
Super. So just the five again, and I'm going to ask you to repeat the fifth one, because you break up ever so slightly. Is it keep the change going? Is that what you said there?
Keep the change going.
So number one and two relates to the arc, which is clear. Why is it needed? And then two, what is the future? Three, build the change with key stakeholders and sharing with them. Four is lead the transition for groups and particular groups and do it simultaneously. And then five, keep the change going and look out for unexpected consequences and correct them when it happens, or accommodate them or modify when it happens. That is awesome. So Erica, thank you. That is super useful. And I think one of the key takeaways right at the beginning is with Jade, like you said, is if you go in like a bull in the China shop, then you know you're not going to be received very well. But if you go in thinking these things through, and at least going through the change arc, clarifying it in your team's mind or your mind before you bring it up with an extended group, then that is the way to do it, right? So
yeah, exactly. And as I'm listening to you, Lance, the one of the great things about this is it helps you understand that an initial fear or hesitation about change is absolutely normal. That is a normal human reaction. And lots of times what I see is leaders hear about a change and unbeknownst to them, they go through their change arc. They start out thinking, well, I don't know. And, you know, and then they make the mindset shift and they go, oh, okay, I can see how we could do this. Yeah, this would be better for the clients. Okay, all right. My boss seems to like it. You know, they get into that easy, rewarding, normal mindset. And then they turn to their people and share the change with them like Jay did and expect them to magically somehow be in the place. They expect their employees to be already through their change arc. Right? In the way that it took them weeks or months to get to. So I think having this understanding that people start through their change arc at the moment they hear about the change, not before. And so it helps leaders to know that when you first unveil a change to somebody, you need to help them make that shift. It's not, they're not change resistant. They're not negative. They're not trying to get in the way. They're just going through this normal, inevitable human process.
Awesome. So Erica, your company, as we said, is Proteus. And the website is proteus-international.com. And could you possibly tell us what people will find if they go to the website? I see there's a Let's Connect button right on the homepage there. I guess they'll go there to find the services that you offer, what you do, your clients, meets the team. And maybe, can you tell us a little bit of a nutshell what Proteus does?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. So as I said, our mission has always been helping clients clarify and move toward their hope for a future. So the way we think about that is leader readiness. How do leaders get ready for the future and to create that future they want? So we have three practice areas that we work in to help people do that. The first we call strengthening leaders. And we have an executive coaching practice and a team coaching practice there. The second practice area is called creating the future. And that's where our change practice lives. And we also have a vision and strategy approach that literally helps companies get clear about the future they want to create and then make a plan for getting there. And then our third practice area we call building skills and knowledge. And it's leadership and management skill workshops, skill programs. And we can teach them or we can train client instructors to teach them. So that's our drill. And we have 25 consultants, mostly in the US, but a few in Europe, one in South America. And we work with clients large and small.
Wow, that's amazing. So I'll have the link in the show notes to your website. I also noticed that you've got a podcast as well, the Proteus Leader Show. I'm going to go and look it up after this interview, and I hope other people do it as well. What can they find if they go to that podcast?
Well, I think the easiest way to another link I'd like to share with your listeners is my website, which is ericaanderson.com. And okay. My name is spelled, both names are spelled unusually, ericaanderson.com. But it's just my name, nothing else. And you can find there about the podcast, about all my books. There's links back to the Proteus website. So that's a good resource, I think. And the Proteus Leader Show, I started it almost 6 years ago. And it's our whole point is to make a quick, practical resource for leaders and managers. And so it's never more than about 15 minutes. And I always have three questions. I ask three questions and we work to answer those questions. And the third question is always some form of give us some practical takeaways. Awesome. And have a lot of great guests. It's really fun.
That is super. I'm going to add it to my podcast list. So thank you so much, Erica, for joining me today. I really appreciate it. And thank you so much for your book, Change from the Inside Out, Making You, Your Team, and Your Organization Change Capable. Really appreciate you taking the time to chat to us.
Me to you. This has been great. Thank you so much, Lance.
And I hope you, the listener, found this as interesting and useful as I did. If you know somebody who is in a company and they see change and the company needs to change or they need to change, then won't you point them to this website, this podcast even. And so point them to the Business Bookshelf podcast and they'll get something useful out of it as well. My email address is lance@thebusinessbookshelfpodcast.com and the website is businessbookshelf.com. So please drop me a line if you want to engage with me. You've got a book that you want to be on air, just let me know and we'll make it happen. So thank you so much. Thanks, Erica, for your time. And thanks, everyone. See you next week. Bye-bye.